Hello and welcome to Cool Sheets,
where we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
You'll hear all about 10 things that we are currently enjoying in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
Don't forget to get all of our show notes on our website, coolsheets.cool.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Let's dive into our Cool Sheets. All right. Hello, everyone. I am Brian Hart.
I'm Karen Holman.
And here we are live in the studio.
Whoa.
It's kind of wild. Yeah. It's been a little while since we've done that.
Yes.
I feel like. So how have you been?
I have been. Oh, I've been so busy.
Crazy busy.
I'm just thinking of all the cool sheets where I think you had one where it was like, it's cool to be busy or it's not cool.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not. It's cool to be busy.
Sorry.
Was never a cool sheet of mine. For the record.
Right. No, right. But that was like the premise of it is that people say that and then it's like, no, it's not. So anyway, so I've been using like a word active, like I've been really active lately.
So same thing, just different words.
the best part is I haven't gotten sick yet.
Well, that's good because I did not do that. I got sick.
Damn it.
And I'm still just a little under the weather, but better. So excuse me if I cough a little. All right. So we have a special episode today. We have a Sundance episode.
Yes. I don't know if we've ever done an episode like this before.
I don't think we've talked about it. I remember when we first were talking about doing the show and we always said, oh, let's kind of avoid themes because that might pigeonhole us and it'd be too difficult. But this one was easy because we both went to Sundance. You went for the first time.
Yes.
Which was very cool. I was so excited. It was not my first time. It was my 18th time. So the opposite of you. But very cool because we had these kind of different perspectives on the festival. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Oh, totally. And we saw a couple of the same movies, but many were different.
They were. A lot were different. More different than the same.
Yeah.
And I know that, at least I'm pretty darn sure that my top five, if we get to all of them, you didn't see any of them.
Oh, that's great.
I guess, except for they're my favorite movies and you didn't see them.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, for better or for worse.
I hope I'll see them eventually.
There will definitely be no duplicates.
Yeah, yeah.
In my end.
I'm trying to think.
Well, probably not your end either, since you didn't see them.
Right. Of mine that I'll be talking about, you have seen one of them.
Okay.
So,
I think I know which one it is.
You do.
Well, do you want to talk about just in general what your Sundance experience was like being the first time?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so
what is Sundance for those that don't know?
Sundance Film Festival. So this started in the 80s. Robert Redford decided, I don't know why he decided, but this is just me watching this little documentary about him I feel like it was to help budding filmmakers and, you know, everything's so busy and crazy in Hollywood and to extract it all from there and then be in this beautiful location in the mountains and away from all of that and to just have this really special experience for people. I just know like sort of a vibe of it. I don't know any details beyond that.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. It is the biggest independent film festival in the United States, possibly the entire world. Cannes is also pretty big in France, but Sundance and Cannes kind of hold the most prestige. There's some other big ones, of course, too. There's tons of film festivals all around the world. Sundance has been around for quite a long time, and a lot of careers have been made there. Quentin Tarantino, Kevin Smith, Robert Rodriguez, the Coen brothers, and many, many, many more have got their start at Sundance. So it's pretty cool to go to this festival and be kind of part of that magic. You do feel it's a very cool town. It's this small little ski town in Park City, Utah. And there's a chairlift that runs right in the middle of the town, which is amazing. They've had the Winter Olympics there not too long ago. It is a magical place for sure.
Really, truly. I was astounded. I Well, and so part of this, the reason why I went, this was a graduation gift to my son, Dean, who wants to go to film school. He has applied to film schools. He's a senior in high school. And I told him a few years ago that, hey, I will take you to Sundance your senior year. And so we've been planning this for quite some time. And it was, for me, it was a combination of, first off, me just being there for the first time ever, and then being with this 18-year-old that was just, you know,
it's
stars
like
in his
Disneyland
eyes.
Yeah, for filmmakers, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So it was really amazing time. And then just a special time, you know, bonding mother-son kind of trip, too.
Yeah, very cool. I was so glad you guys got to do it and experience what I experience every year, which is kind of mind-boggling too, because it's so different for me. It's just part of my life now.
Mm-hmm.
As every January, I go to Sundance, and everything is very familiar now. So it's a different kind of wonder for me. It's not that there's nothing like the first time when you go somewhere or experience something, mm-hmm. and that sense of like everything's so new and wonderful and magical. But for me, now that I've been there so long, it's so familiar that actually makes it even more magical for me. Not comparing first versus 18th, but just different, a different kind of magic.
Yeah.
And I still don't take it for granted. I know I'm super lucky to be able to volunteer there. And so I work at the festival. I volunteer my time and work at a theater, the Egyptian Theater, which is the original theater at Sundance. So this was the one where Robert Redford in those first few years used to stand outside the theater and beg people to try to come in and see movies.
That's amazing.
He was worried that this wasn't going to work and that no one would come see it. And he was,
oh my God.
And this is when he was a big Hollywood actor. This is obviously after Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. That's where he got the name. And so to imagine him just out there soliciting, you know, and like pitching people like a carnival or something, you know, step right in. Watch a movie that you've never heard of.
That's one of those moments, you know, people ask about time machines. Like, if you could go back to any moment in time, you know, that would be just one of those cool little moments to be able to walk up to the Egyptian Theater in 1985 and talk to Robert Redford and have him bring you into the theater.
Right.
Oh, my God.
It would be pretty darn cool. All right. Well, I guess I will talk about my first cool sheet. And it's a movie. All mine are movies. I don't know if you have any wild cards up your sleeve, but I'm going to go with the movie. And this one is called Social Dilemma. And this movie, I usually kind of save the best for last, but I have to talk about this movie first. I want to make sure that I talk about it. It's a documentary. It's directed by Jeff Orlowski, and Jeff did Chasing Ice and then Chasing Coral. So he's been nominated for Academy Awards, very established filmmaker now. He won like some kind of climate change hero award or something from the UN, or he's a big deal in the documentary film world. And this movie, though, is totally different. So these first two films were very environmental. One was about the melting ice caps, and the second one was about the coral reefs disintegrating, essentially, right before our eyes. Both very good, very scary. This is a totally different movie. It examines how designers at big tech companies such as Google, Facebook, Twitter can influence social media, but even more than that, really the entire world. And I think I already knew a lot about this, but I wanted to learn more. I always want to be more aware of what's going on, especially with the elections that happened almost 3 years ago now, where there was tampering with social media. And there's just been so many things. This is an ongoing thing that isn't going away. And now we're coming up on another election, a big election for president. And what's going to happen? Is there going to be more of it? Have we stopped it? What else does social media influence? And this movie will freak you out, but it is really a must-see. It should be required viewing at every school, pretty much every human. And these are all mostly ex-executives for each of these big, giant social media companies. Am I out of time already?
You're almost out of time.
I guess I'm out of time. Go see Social Dilemma when it comes out. I didn't even get to talk about the scary stuff.
Okay, you have to just, right now, Brian, tell me, What did those CEOs, ex-CEOs, say that was so scary?
So the scariest part was actually at the end. So semi-spoiler alert, but not really, because there's so much information here. They asked them, what is their biggest fear? And immediately the first person said, civil war. And he goes, but that's just short term. That's just something that's going to happen in the very near future.
That's so insane.
We're going to go through another civil war. That's where we're headed right now. The second and more scary thing than civil war somehow is the end of democracy. He said, period, the world will have
like
no
worldwide.
Democracy. Yeah.
Oh.
And that really punched me in the gut in an already horrific movie of what social media is doing, how they track you, how they influence you. They don't want to influence you a ton. They only need to influence everybody 1%. And it will completely change the world, usually for the worst, usually separating us more, which is definitely happening. It's super freaking scary.
Yeah.
But you need to know about it. Everybody should see this movie. I hope that we will bring it here soon.
Right. I have been trying to stay away from social media, I would say, especially in the last maybe 4 months or so. And, you know, there's good and bad with that. And part of it is, like, I didn't repost a promotion for Cool Sheets today because I'm, you know, my go-to is to stay away. But then when I really need to promote something important or that I want to, then it's, you know, in the back burner.
So. Yeah, it's really hard because social media is such a part of our DNA now. And it's a great way to connect with friends that you don't see all the time, figure out what's going on. Events, it's really good at events.
Yes, it is.
So there are some good things. It's not all evil, but still the degree that they are watching and influencing and lurking and doing things to make you stay on longer and make you feel more separated and alone is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me, too, because I have a second job is being social media. Mm-hmm. So I have to stay plugged in.
Yeah.
All the time, and it's difficult because I would love to just shut them all off, but you do lose some communication. Friends have done that, and then they are out of the loop because there's no more text chains even. It's all communicating through events on Facebook and things like that, so it gets difficult. Yeah.
Well,
it's crazy.
What is really has been hitting me, I would say, in the last year, I'm sure maybe it's obvious to a lot of people, but it really hit me was when someone would do something important in their life, or they would go on a trip or something, and then I would see them in person and talk to them and ask them, and they were like, "Well, didn't you see my posts?"
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I didn't.
Expected to
so
do
could
that.
You please just tell me right now? Because no, I didn't. You know. So exactly, it's just an expectation.
Yeah, it's a different kind of world we live in now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's still it's wild, for sure.
Yeah. My first cool sheet. This is a movie. This is a movie that I saw at Sundance. And this was my favorite, so I am going to talk about it first. And it's called Charm City Kings. This was done by the directors Angel Manuel Soto. And he has some movies already under his belt. And he came back to have this one. And wow, he did an amazing job. So Charm City Kings, this was based in Baltimore. And wow. Story-wise, so this is why it rose to the top for me, because it is the best story that I've seen in a long while in any movie. And the story arc, the main story arc itself, was beautifully done. But this really hit me was how there were some underlying subplots that were happening that were so beautifully woven in. And a lot of times subplots feel like afterthoughts, or one maybe starts and doesn't finish, and you're kind of thinking, why did they even bother? Wow, he did this beautifully. So I actually made a list of all of the themes in this movie, because there were so many. And he very powerfully, with the story, told stories of friendships, of family, of first love, of balancing following your safe dreams versus your dangerous dreams, lessons on transitioning into adulthood, lessons of redemption, sacrifice, And I got to say, there were some badass dirt bike stunts that were also carried out throughout this story. So we're looking at Baltimore, and this is all about dirt bike riders and a kid who really wants to be part of this gang, essentially called the Midnight Click, and all of his story. So he's about 14 years old, his family and everything surrounding it. Beautiful story, really fun, exciting, and authentic. Charm City Kings.
Authentic, the word of the year for Sundance. Oh. I heard authentic from so many people.
Oh my gosh.
It almost got like, okay, I don't want to hear that anymore.
Oh, that's
and then you
funny.
Said it's so funny.
I didn't
every
even know.
Every reviewer, every person on the bus, every friend, that was so authentic.
Like, well, I will say, like,
that's so funny that you said it right.
He got real bike, dirt bike riders to ride,
yeah.
And they're riding without helmets, and they're doing their own stunts. And one of the characters just got out of jail. Well, the actor who portrayed it had just gotten out of jail, so he. I won't use that word, but wow, he did a great job in casting and just pulling it all together. He also had some really good stories about being in Baltimore and setting up the whole set and how he really got into the neighborhoods to the point where the people living in the neighborhoods, if someone else was coming in, they'd be like, oh, no, no, wait, no, they're filming. You know, so he feels like they became a part of the neighborhood. They were wholly not only accepted, but they were protected by the people in
those
neighborhoods.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds authentic.
Oh, God. You said it.
I know.
So anyway, I don't know if you heard about that movie from anyone else other than
I
Dean
haven't
and I.
actually, which is surprising. I know you were raving about it, and Dean, I think both really liked it. I didn't hear about it much other than that, but I do want to see it now. And I looked it up on IMDb really quickly, and it's got pretty good ratings. It's pretty early, so there's not a ton. But other people that watched it seem to really like it as well, so that is cool.
And of all the movies that I saw, that was the only one that won an award at Sundance.
Okay.
It won the Best Ensemble Cast.
Okay.
So I'm not even, I'd never even heard of that award, but
yeah,
anyway,
it
won
it. They add a lot these days. Sundance had a lot fewer awards, not just maybe 5 years ago. And now there's so many. And this year there was a couple very specific. I was like, did they create that award just for this
that.
Film? Because
that's
it was,
funny.
And it was a movie I really liked. I can't remember if it's on my list or not. I think it is. I think it's one of my last ones that I have here. And I was like, well, all right. Yeah. Most authentic.
Right.
Everyone wins.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it is funny because I was just telling a friend of mine that. I was like, oh my gosh, everybody said authentic so much that you said it. It just struck me very funny. These are the weird patterns that I pick up on when 18 years, when you have nothing else to go by. The themes. Because there are themes throughout Sundance, which is really strange. There's a lot of movies that have similar themes. And it's just, I know it doesn't happen on purpose because these are all filmmakers working independently.
Yeah.
But then you will see a lot of commonalities and things like that. Of course, there's a lot of coming of age stories. That's a staple at Sundance. A lot of heavy dramas and heavy docs and a lot of heaviness. And it's funny, too, because that was the other thing. Someone sent me an article from the New York Post, I believe, and they're like, darkest Sundance ever. Like, every movie I saw was dark. And I was like, was that their first year?
Right.
Because it's been 18 years for me of dark films.
Yeah.
That's why the light ones and comedies are so refreshing and wonderful. Because it's such a break from the insanity of Sundance. It gets super dark when you watch 26 movies that are super dark and then that one that isn't. It's your instant favorite, at least for the moment. Maybe not the one that sticks with you the longest, but you're like, huh.
Right.
Finally.
Well, yeah, I got to say, I think it was the 8th or 9th movie that I saw was called The Climb.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was the most comedic. Mm. And I was just
it's
like,
so
I sort of
nice.
Relaxed in my seat. Like, yeah. And what's funny is that it was, some of it was dark humor, but still just the fact that I was laughing, the audience is laughing. And anyway.
So I'll go to my next school sheet. It is one of my favorite dramas that I saw, probably my number one. And it is called Minari, and it is directed by Lee Isaac Chung. And it's about a Korean family that moves to Arkansas to start a farm in the 1980s. And this is starring Steven Yeun, who is very famous from Walking Dead. He played Glenn. And his mother-in-law is Yoon Jung-yoon, I believe. And she is a very, very super famous Korean actress, and she's an older person. She plays his mother-in-law, like I said, and she's amazing. Everybody in this cast is really amazing. And also Alan S. Kim, who plays their son, is just the cutest little kid. He steals every scene between the grandma, as good as Steven is, but between the grandma and this little boy, they have a boy and a girl, but the little boy, oh my gosh, he's just the cutest in the world. And he's just plays himself kind of angsty and anxious and running around being a wonderful little kid. This is a really great film that I don't want to give away too much about it, but it did win. It actually won the Grand Jury Prize for the critics and the audience award, which those two don't usually agree all of the time. A lot of the times the audience likes the lighter film and the films that kind of are the escape of Sundance almost, and the critics like to stick to the gritty and the darker dramas. And this is kind of an in-between. It's a very serious story, drama, and it has definitely some edgier moments, some tense moments, and it's about the family, and it's just so wonderfully told and beautiful, and it's shot really well, and I just can't say enough good things about it. Definitely check it out, Minari.
I think I heard about this one even before Sundance. Is that possible?
Some of them are premieres, so they already... Okay. This one was in the drama competition, so it definitely got a lot of buzz even before the film festival.
Yeah.
But as soon as it started and as soon as the press saw it, they were raving about it instantly.
Wow.
So this was one that I think Angela right away from back home told me, definitely check out Minari. Mm-hmm. She helped me a lot, actually, because I kind of don't look at media at all before or during the festival. I'm just kind of in the moment, sometimes by choice and sometimes just because I've got other things going on before the festival, like TEDx Salem, this little project right before everything. But so I'm a little distracted, and I was super thankful because she was the first one to tell me about it, but not the last. Mm-hmm. A lot of people started talking about it, so I made sure that I saw it, and it was worth it for sure.
That's so great.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm guessing. So Dean and I were there in the second half of Sundance. And so by that time, I think the hype was already just out of control. And it would have been really difficult for us to get in and see it.
Yeah. If you didn't have a ticket already, it would have been a hard ticket to get.
Yeah. But the good thing
it
is.
It will come out for
exactly,
sure.
Exactly. Something
for
like
sure.
that.
When winning both of those, the biggest awards at Sundance, it will definitely be coming out, hopefully at the Salem Cinema.
I was going to say.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Because I will see it again. It's beautiful.
Wonderful. All right. My next cool sheet is another movie from Sundance, and this is called Sylvie's Love. So Eugene Ash is the director, and he was there, and he spoke a little bit before the movie, and then, of course, again after. That's one of the things I love about Sundance is that having the directors there. He told us right before the screening, he said, "Leave your cynicism at the door and believe in love." I'm like, okay. And then the name of the movie is Sylvie's Love. I'm like, all right, it's going to be a love story. Fine. And I got to say, I put love story movies in a certain category. Usually they're guilty pleasures, and usually it's just kind of almost like unbelievable because everything's all perfect and whatever. But ooh, this movie is now my favorite love story movie. It has risen up there because it's so much more than just that. So premise here, we're looking at late 1950s, early 1960s, New York City, jazz scene, music scene. And that alone, just the cinematography The whole vibe of that is beautiful. It is lovely. The costume director, I'm not sure who did costume design, but they did an impeccable job. I do know that Chanel donated a couple dresses for some of the scenes that were used. And any of you who like Mad Men or The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and just how the costumes are so perfectly 1960s, they did the same kind of job. And then in terms of the storyline, we have, so the woman, she's working at a record store with her dad, and then the guy is a saxophone player and he plays at jazz clubs. And so, of course, through music, they're making connection. The music itself throughout the film is fabulous. That said, for those of you who might not like jazz or don't want to hear music throughout the entire movie, it's also not overdone. It's done just in the right degree. And also watching at that point in time how people's careers and balancing them and families and all of that was transitioning from your typical 1950s into your atypical 60s and 70s. So watching all that happen with this beautiful story, Sylvie's Love.
Yeah, cool. Another one that I did not get to see, but I'll have to check it out.
Yes, I'm sure it'll come out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just exquisite.
Very cool.
And Dean, 18 years old, it was his favorite movie of all the ones he saw at Sundance.
Wow.
He ranked it number one.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, of course, he is a jazz drummer, so he loved the jazz.
Yeah.
But he loved a lot more than that about it, so.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's a winner.
So a double stamp of approval. I'll definitely have to see it then.
Indeed.
Feels good, man.
Yeah.
Should I go to my next one? So you just got a little teaser. You might know what Feels Good Man means, for better or for worse, but that is the name of my next film. It is called Feels Good Man. It's directed by Arthur Jones. And this is a documentary about the artist Matt Fury, creator of the Pepe Le Frog. And he created this when he was young. It was his favorite little doodle character. And he is this quintessential hippie stoner dude from San Francisco. Very free spirit. And like I said, he loved frogs, but he kind of always made, he made a comic book called Feels Good, or no, I forgot what the comic book was called, but it featured Pepe and his few roommates who were also other animals. And they would do stuff. And this one scene that he wrote where he was going to the bathroom and he put his pants all the way down to his ankles and his friend caught him. And he's like, what was up with you going to the bathroom like that? He's like, feels good, man. And this became like a crazy mantra for like bodybuilders. And they kept saying like, pump some iron, feels good, man. And Matt's friends told him about this. And they said, you know, you should get that copyrighted and maybe make them stop doing that. And he's like, no, it's kind of funny and whatever. You're like, I'm not that kind of copyright guy. And I'm going to sue him or whatever. And then all of a sudden it spiraled and the white supremacist party and other very evil people got a hold of it and used it and didn't copyright it, but they kind of took it over. And then he got really worried and he's like, I got to get this back. It did not work. It became a registered hate symbol. So this is something that is used all the time now for just horrible things on 4chan and other places like that. And he tried to get it back through force, through kindness, through everything, and it was impossible. There's like, it's ours now. Too bad for you. And so this documentary goes through the entire story from beginning to end, and where it's at now is very different even than I thought of. I didn't know, and I've listened to a couple podcasts about this story already, so I had some knowledge going in, but it surprised me. And he was there, of course, which was amazing. He started crying as soon as he got on stage. It was beautiful. Feels good, man.
I don't know if I've ever really heard that saying in the context of anything besides someone just saying it.
Yeah, and you're probably not on 4chan a lot or bodybuilding forums.
True.
So you might hear about it more often, a little bit more often now yeah, that I've just pointed it out in one of those things.
Exactly.
But it was very much, and it's mostly the Pepe, it's his face that they put on like Nazis, and they put this frog face on and took over that symbol. That's the more thing that you might have seen that if I showed it to you. But it's so wild to have something taken away from an artist like that.
Something that
he had a very strong emotional attachment. Mm-hmm. It was always his favorite person. And now it became a hate symbol. And him going through that was just really difficult to watch, but a very interesting story too.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it's wild. And the ending, I don't want to give it away, but it's so amazing what has happened since then. So this is a picture of what the frog looks like.
Oh, yeah, I've totally seen that.
Yeah. So yeah, he's very distinctive, but also very easy to draw, which made him become this symbol that a lot of people used. There's a lot of Donald Trump looking Pepes. Mm-hmm. And this is not people making fun of Trump. This is people for Trump. And it's a wild story. It's so crazy.
Wow. Okay. And that one will probably come out.
I got to imagine it will.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Feels good, man.
Yeah.
Or maybe sometimes it doesn't feel so good.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, my next cool sheet is also a documentary, and it's the one documentary that made it to my top three. It is called Be Water. This is the one that you saw as well. And this is a documentary about Bruce Lee. And I didn't know too much about Bruce Lee going into this, just generally speaking. And I also had never seen a documentary about him before. There are many that are out there. But what makes this one unique, at least from what I can tell from talking to people who've seen all the Bruce Lee documentaries and reading about it and now hearing from the director of this one, is so the director is Bao Nguyen, and he is the son of Vietnamese refugees. And he grew up in L.A. And so he already just right there has some parallels with Bruce Lee in terms of Bruce Lee being actually born in San Francisco, even though his parents were from Hong Kong, and they just happened to be in the United States when he was born. And then he went back, was raised in Hong Kong, and came back over. And so he's got his whole story. But I wanted to say a couple things about the director, that as he was growing up in LA and he's watching movies, and he never really felt like he saw himself until he saw Bruce Lee. And that was when Bruce became his idol, and it was a significant turning point in his life of seeing him. And then, of course, now he's become a filmmaker. So he really, really wanted to tell a powerful and real story about Bruce Lee from a different point of view and from his point of view. So it's his story, but you wouldn't guess that except for the fact that it was just told so differently. And I've got to venture to guess it's because of his point of view. So he was able to get to know Bruce's family. And he said that's what took the longest amount of time. So we're talking 5 years. He hadn't even gotten the approval to make this movie. He is just talking with them. He's becoming friends with them slowly. And, you know, of course, they're caged. They don't, you know, people coming in all the time about Bruce Lee. And so that he was able to do that made all the difference. The story arc is also unique how he does it. Fabulous documentary, Be Water.
Yes. So I saw this movie very early. It was the one film that I did have on my radar before Sundance, the only one.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, I have to see this. Bruce Lee was a huge influence in my childhood as well. And I've actually seen almost every documentary possible on Bruce Lee. So actually all the footage I've seen before and almost the entire story I've seen before, but never as in one piece, in one film, and succinct like this was. So I still enjoyed it immensely.
Awesome.
Really, really good doc. But yeah, Bruce Lee has been a hero of mine forever too. So
yeah.
I was super excited to see this.
And there was stuff I just didn't know about him. He's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's all I can say, like, without going on and on.
Yeah.
Just like kind-hearted.
Way ahead of his time.
Yes. Strong and
broke and upset a lot of people, including his own culture, his own background in martial arts, all kinds of things. There's also all this mystery. And I kind of like that they didn't get into the curse of the dragon and all these conspiracy theories that also follow Bruce Lee and his entire family. It was just, this is his life as an actor and a martial artist, and it was very on point, just didn't dive into other rabbit holes, which it could have, and those are interesting in itself, but I think it was did the movie more justice to just stick with the facts and the family and growing up and things like that. Cool. All right. I'm going to go for at least one more really quick because I've got to talk about this documentary also. It's called Us Kids. It's directed by Kim A. Snyder, and it is about the students at Mary Joyce Stoneman Douglas High School. So these are the Parkland, Florida kids. They had a school shooting with 17 people were killed. And this is a documentary about the kind of the activists, the kids that immediately took this tragedy and became activists. They are the kids that influenced Greta, who's, I think, just won a Nobel Peace Prize and is Time Magazine Person of the Universe, one of the biggest environmental people on Earth. This is the kids that inspired her to take action. So very, very cool. I'm sure a lot of you know about these people already. Emma Gonzalez, she's the wonderful gal that had the shaved head that gave this amazing speech days after Washington, D.C., along with a lot of them, but hers was extra powerful, and her sound bites went really, really viral. David Hogg, Jacqueline Corin, Samantha Fuentes are some of the other kids. They're all amazing. And then it just goes about from when the tragedy happened until basically today and what they've been up to. And I noticed as well that I haven't heard a lot from them lately. And this is another, like you have already said, a great thing about Sundance is the Q&A afterwards. So they've essentially taken the last year, 2019, to reorganize and re-strategize and really hit the pavement hard in 2020 during this election year. And so that's why they've been quiet, is because they've been organizing, and now they're going to be a full force again. They've already done a lot of change for the better on gun control is one of their biggest things, and also just getting youth active and voting and registered. They started March for Our Lives campaign. They're doing so many amazing things, and they were all there. Talk about heroes. So I don't really geek out anymore for celebrities, big A-list celebrities. But when these kids came up, I freaked out. It was amazing. I'm so in awe of all of them. And to take something so horrible and almost change it and turn it into a good thing is just mind-boggling to me. I would be a mess all the time. But they're real. They're real kids. And they're dealing with trauma all the time. And they're not always doing well, obviously. And they talk about that, too, in the doc. It's a really good film. It's called Us Kids.
I really, really want to see that.
Sure. It's a film that everyone, again, should see. It does talk about right-wing conspiracies and how all these shootings are fake, which just blows my mind. This director also did another really good documentary, super powerful, Newtown, about the other shooting in Newtown when it was the grade school that got all shot up. And just also, but people, you know, say that's fake as well. It's just mind-boggling. That I can't even fathom.
Right.
But she does a very good job at being super respectful to all of the family and this tragedy, but still showing it some light, because we do need to talk about these things more.
Yeah.
And not forget them.
Right.
And see how we can stop them.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, we don't have a lot of time, but I am going to talk about this will be my fourth. So this one, I wanted to, with this cool sheet, is, you know, Sundance is kind of expensive, but that you can bring your kids, and it can be fairly inexpensive. And I just learned this from bringing Dean, my son, and that is through the Ignite program. So this is something that started in 2015, and it was with the support of Adobe that funded it. And essentially, it allows you to buy a ticket for someone who is between 18 years old and 25 years old. And so they can get a ticket to see 10 films, and then actually they end up getting plus 5 more vouchers and some more stuff I'll talk about for way less money than it costs just regular people. So there is a way that you can bring kids, and not only do they get to see these 10 films, but they have programs for them. And so this would be more dependent on if there is someone who's younger who's interested in doing film, but it could also be just someone who was interested in film in general and just kind of seeing the nuts and bolts of it. So Dean was able to participate in some of these panels. And again, these are just for kids, and where he learned about how to fund your film project and also how to market your film project and how to connect with people. So it really could be someone, anyone who's younger and interested in any aspect of the filmmaking. And also he was able to participate in another, it was a Q&A and a speed dating where he was able to talk one-on-one or in small groups with directors and producers of the films that were being shown at Sundance. Now, not all of them, and it wasn't any of the big names, but these were people who had successfully gotten films into Sundance and just learning about their stories. And one of his favorite stories was just someone who did a bunch of on-location shots in South Africa and just learning about that. And Dean's never really thought about doing anything worldwide, and he just got really excited about it. So I just want to make sure that people knew about this awesome program, Ignite, that is at Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah, very cool. Such a neat resource for kids. And like you said, Sundance can be expensive, so it's really cool that they offer some of these programs.
Yeah.
I volunteer, so that's the only reason why I get to go so many times is because once you're an alum, you get lodging usually and a lot of things for free. So that helps out a lot. Absolutely. But it's pretty cool to check it out if you can.
Right.
Well,
this has been a great show with
great
our
show.
Theme, Sundance theme.
Yeah.
I think it's our first like full-on themed show.
Yeah,
so
where we both participated in the theme.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.